How many of the wars that have been fought throughout human history were preventable? From the standpoint of logic, perhaps every one of them, because one side or another could have chosen a more peaceful or strategically sensible path. But how often should one nation jump in to cut off another's aggression when it may not be completely clear what the result could be? Great Britain and France, for example, seriously contemplated engaging with Germany as early as 1936, but didn't do so. Could action then have limited Hitler's evil actions and World War II? Scott Silverstone isn't sure preventive war would have been the correct path to save millions of lives. Silverstone is a professor at West Point and author of the book From Hitler's Germany to Saddam's Iraq, The Enduring False Promise of Preventive War, and he's with me via Skype. So, Scott, for many foreign policy experts, preventive war can be a good thing. From your perspective, what are some of the possible complications?
We don't have a crystal ball to understand the future enough, with enough clarity to know whether or not the risks you're taking, the kind of problems you may set in motion by actually initiating military conflict, are going to solve the kind of fears that haunt your visions of the future. So there's that inherent uncertainty problem that all leaders have to face. And it's an age-old problem. It's really something back in recorded history, we find accounts of 2,500 years ago. So this idea of shifting power, the fear of the future that shifting power causes, and that temptation to pull a trigger under the conditions of inherent uncertainty. It's a problem that has been around forever. It's a problem we'll always face each generation. So it's this kind of enduring problem that we need to continue to focus and research on.
At its core, how much of it is about, frankly, not trusting our fellow human being, someone who may live in a different country and feel like, you know, that if that person gets in power or that person decides to have his country do this or that, that could potentially have a bad impact on us, so we need to step in?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, clearly, when we think about the potential targets for a preventive attack, at the core of it has to be, why do you distrust the state that's rising in power in the first place? And we know that when you look around the world, we have certain usual suspects, countries that we believe, for whatever reason, in the way we interpret their behavior, we try to figure out what their intentions are. And that really is the key question. What brings us to believe that with greater power, a potential rival might do something aggressive, might do something dangerous that makes it smart to take the initiative today? It's very hard to crawl inside the psychology of other leaders, their decision-making processes, how risk-prone or risk-averse they are, to know whether or not you're doing the smart thing.
Many historians, many observers will say that part of Hitler's ability to dominate for many years as he did was the fact that Britain, for example, didn't act more quickly, didn't act more strongly with him. And as part of your book, in your view, and people are saying, no, that's not really, that wouldn't have made a difference, or it wouldn't have been the right method to do. So should something have been tried? I guess because there are a lot of people who are going to hear that title and think, wait a second, not even Hitler?
Frankly, I knew this was provocative going into it. And it is a story that has not been studied closely enough. I kept coming across this claim. Winston Churchill made this claim in his memoirs of World War II. Very serious historians and political scientists have also made this claim that the French and the British missed a golden opportunity in the mid-1930s, particularly 1936, during the so-called Rhineland crisis. And the claim is, if they had only launched an attack into Western Germany to push the German military back across the Rhine River, they would have set in motion a cascading set of events that would have led to either the overthrow of Adolf Hitler, or the German military would have stepped in to tame Hitler's ambitions. The ultimate claim is preventive war in 1936 would have stopped World War II. And this is an incredibly powerful claim. If we think about the emotion that we still hold in terms of that terribly tragic story, it's a claim that people read, and on its face, given how we look back with hindsight, and we have a full picture of exactly what Hitler was plotting, we can trace the timeline year to year that builds up to his invasion of Poland in 1939 and then France in 1940. And our natural reaction is to say, well, of course they missed this golden opportunity. Of course it would have been smart to challenge Nazi Germany before Hitler was ready to actually go on the offensive himself in 1939. And the iconic historical claim has become, don't be like the British and French, attack Iran, attack North Korea, attack Iraq. And I kept coming across this claim, and I didn't buy it. It didn't sit well with me. And what bothered me was, it has never been explored. Nobody has actually picked apart the strategic circumstances of 1936 to evaluate whether or not preventive attack would have had those really profound strategic effects, overthrowing Hitler, stopping World War II. Through my research, I discovered that even in 1936, British leaders, including Winston Churchill, rejected preventive war because they believed that preventive war would actually put in motion what they feared most, and that was a second Great War. They were desperately trying to find a way to control the rise of German power short of war. So the tragic element of this story is, when you look at counterfactual stories that we could tell, what are the most likely outcomes, even if the French successfully pushed the Germans back across the Rhine River? I conclude that, frankly, this would have blown up in France's face. It would not have led to a coup d'etat. Hitler would have stayed in power. It would have led to a rally around the flag effect, supporting Hitler's larger agenda. And France, frankly, would have been blamed for launching the inevitable spiral that would have turned into World War II anyway.
I do wonder about the phrase, the moral high ground. And how does that apply sometimes when it comes to preventive war? Does it matter if the motive is about morality?
That's a very important point. And this is why, from a broader political perspective, if you think about how others are going to react to your preventive attack, think about the deeper history of preventive war. Again, going back to that post-war, World War I period, the consensus position around the world is that preventive war is aggression. It's not legitimate self-defense. Even if you're claiming that you're trying to stop a future, more costly conflict 2 or 5 years from now, it's important that you can sustain the legitimacy of launching war. And of course, we're talking about violence and we're talking about death and destruction that you choose to unleash. It becomes a very important political question for your own people to sustain support for this war, for your allies, for neutral observers, and for the target state. How do they assess the legitimacy of your choice to pull the trigger? And if they don't see that you have the moral high ground, this can cause you serious political problems that also may backlash.
Scott Silverstone is a professor at West Point. He's also author of the new book, From Hitler's Germany to Saddam's Iraq, The Enduring False Promise of Preventive War. Scott, good to talk with you. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me, Steve.